From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Gelton, and this is On Point. Some ballots still have to be counted, and the election results haven't been certified, but Alabama's Secretary of State says the people have spoken. Democrat Doug Jones has almost certainly defeated Roy Moore in yesterday's special U.S. Senate election. The election means a lot to the Democrats and the Republicans in Congress. This hour on Point, Alabama, a deeply red state, looks set to send a Democrat to Congress for the first time in 25 years. Roy Moore will stay home. You can join us on air or online. To our listeners in Alabama, we'd like to hear what you make of yesterday's vote. To the rest of the country, what do you make of the Alabama results? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. First, here was Democrat Doug Jones last night celebrating with his supporters.
I am truly, truly overwhelmed. But you know, folks, and you have all heard me say this at one point or another in this campaign, I have always believed that the people of Alabama had more in common than to divide us.
Meanwhile, at his campaign headquarters last night, Roy Moore told his supporters why he apparently did not win, and he turned to Scripture for solace.
Part of the problem with this campaign is we've been painted in an unfavorable and unfaithful light. We've been put in a hole, if you will, and it reminds me of a passage in Psalm 40. I waited patiently for the Lord. That's what we've got to do. And he inclined to me and heard my cry and brought us up also out of a horrible pit, out of miry clay, and set my feet on a rock and established my goings and put a new song in our mouth.
And that is Judge Roy Moore talking to his supporters last night about his apparent defeat in the election. And joining me now from Huntsville, Alabama, is Lita Gore. She's a reporter for the Birmingham News. She's been this show's eyes and ears throughout the campaign. Lita, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
So the polls suggested that Roy Moore was in front in this campaign, I think by an average of about 2 points or so. What did the polls miss?
Well, I think the polls, and there was really no way to quantify this, was turnout. Turnout was so much larger. You know, they had predicted 25%. During the primary, it was 18%, and we're pushing, some places say as high as 50. I think we're still waiting to see, but I think the turnout was so much higher, and Jones just did a better job of selling his message.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have to be a little bit provisional about this. Your Secretary of State said that Doug Jones is almost certainly the winner. Moore has not yet conceded, didn't immediately concede after the election. How certain is this outcome at this point, as far as you know?
It's fair. I would say 99%. I mean, there are always, there's military ballots that are coming in, but Jones, you know, the election was called when Jefferson County was still out. And the reason that was is because that's a tradition. You know, it's Birmingham. It's a Democratic stronghold, one of the few in the state. The city of Birmingham mostly is. And so the writing was sort of on the wall fairly quickly. There could be some massive influx. I don't see it. And the thing to remember, when the Secretary of State said that this morning, he has been a Moore supporter from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So for him to come out and say that was sort of the first sign of, okay, we're not seeing a way around a Doug Jones victory.
Yeah. Of course, the polls gave, somewhat different results depending on how they gathered the data and so forth. But clearly, there was a miss here. Particularly interesting is the result of women who voted. Jones won women by 16 points. Of course, Moore won white women by 29. Is there any indication there that white women, for example, did not tell their husbands who they were going to vote for? Or what's your explanation?
Well, I think there is some of that. I think the polls don't do a great job. If you look back at histories of polling in Senate races, they are traditionally not as accurate as you find in other places, and especially in a state like Alabama where accurate polling is hard. Moore was counting on a rural vote to push him through. But where Moore failed, and of course when we, you know, dissect this race now, you realize that Moore sort of, you know, he did not get his message out at all.
In fact, he seemed to be in hiding at the end there, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And whoever the advisors who told him, don't go press the flesh, don't go talk to people, don't go get out and do what a politician does, failed him dramatically. And we saw that happen last night. But I think what happened in a lot of cases is people that were your suburban Republicans, I heard them described as Bush Republicans, mm-hmm. which I think is a very accurate description, they stayed home.
Mm-hmm.
Or we had 22,000, at least 20,000 write-in votes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people just felt like they did not have a choice. If you were not on that far right of the Republican Party who was willing to accept a Moore-type candidate, then you were left without a candidate. So they stayed home or they wrote in a candidate.
And, Lita, did you get out to some polling places yesterday and talk to voters? And did you come away with a sense of what the mood was?
I did. You know, going into it, I was asked the night before the election my prediction. And I said Moore by 5 points. Well, yesterday, I'm out voting. And around in North Alabama, which is your typical suburban area. And I've talked to a young lady that drove in from Tuscaloosa, took a three-hour drive the night before to come vote because she had missed the window to vote absentee. She drove in to vote, and you could tell it was a passion. I mean, she made an effort. It was the middle of finals. She was voting. She was leaving and driving back to Tuscaloosa. She was a young African-American voter. She did not tell me who she's voting for, but she was certainly energized for whoever she was voting for. And when I had to wait in line yesterday to vote was my first real sign of we could be seeing some change here, because I don't think Moore's message just was not reaching people because he simply wasn't delivering it. He was sort of attacking on the fringes, not appearing in public, not speaking, not selling anything other than I didn't do this. And another thing I think that Moore did that was certainly harmful, the people he surrounded himself with that he put out there as his proxies and his spokespeople were a disaster. From start to finish. You know, he had some disastrous people speaking for him on TV and on the radio, and so what happened is whatever message he was trying to get out was caught up in this bizarre circus of the people he was putting out there.
Yeah.
And I just think that Alabamians, Roy Moore was a flawed candidate from the start, and we saw that last night.
Well, let's bring another Alabamian into this conversation, Lita, if you could hold on for a second. Winston Groom joins us now from Point Clear, Alabama. He's a novelist, a historian, the author of the famous book Forrest Gump, most recently the novel El Paso. Winston Groom, thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
So what do you make of this election result? Are you as surprised as Lita seems to be?
No, I the Republicans made a miscalculation. It was a small miscalculation. The vote was less than 1%, I think, that they lost by, but they jumped the wrong way. And Roy Moore was, when you talk about a flawed candidate, he was flawed before all of these accusations about sexual behavior went. How he got there was a fluke, I think. But it was a very costly fluke for the Republicans, although I don't think it's in the long string of things going to make a whole lot of difference, but it surely can. It makes a difference temporarily in the Senate, where now you have you're 2 votes ahead. Republicans would have been 3 votes ahead.
Right. So a flawed candidate, does that mean that you think that in 3 years when Doug Jones' short term ends, that Alabama will revert to a traditional pattern and put Republicans back in office?
That would be my guess. No. Although I was surprised, very much surprised, your newspaper reporter was, I went to the polls, and I had to stand in a line. And normally, you know, we have to stand in a line here in these in this polling place.
You never stood in line before?
Not for a long time. Ever since I got out of the Army, I said, there's two things I never do. One was wear a name tag, and one was stand in a line. Mm-hmm. But there was a very larger than any presidential race that I can remember in this particular polling area, which is a small town here at Point Clear. But there were a lot of people out, and of course, this, the race got an enormous press. I mean, every time you turn on television,
yeah,
or pick up paper, it was going on. So it energized a lot of people. I don't know if that's going to continue.
Well, that's the question. I mean, what do you think will be the result of this election? Aside from the fact that a Republican seat in the U.S. Senate has gone to the Democrats, do you see any sort of tidal shift in Alabama politics here? Do you see perhaps, an energizing of the black vote, or any sort of, like, will there be any reflection on the part of Republicans about what type of candidate, they present in the future?
My guess would be no. This was a very special case where you had a man accused of some pretty serious sexual crimes.
Yeah.
And this is, a total conflict with what the Republicans say they believe, which is, we don't elect criminals. Yeah. And I can't see that it was a fluke.
This is On Point. I'm Tom Gelton. We're taking stock. Alabama looks to be sending a Democrat to the U.S. Senate for the first time in a quarter century. Yesterday's election there followed an especially divisive campaign. You can join our conversation. Do you think the allegations of sexual misconduct against Moore sank him? Are you relieved the state, the Republican Party, and the nation can now put the former judge behind them? Follow us on Twitter, and you can find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Let's first consider what this means for President Trump, because in early December, President Trump recorded a robocall in support of Roy Moore's Senate campaign. Here's a clip.
Roy Moore is the guy we need to pass our Make America Great Again agenda. Roy is a conservative who helped me steer this country back on track after 8 years of the Obama disaster. Get out and vote for Roy Moore.
Well, some people did, but more people voted for Democrat Doug Jones. And at his victory speech last night, Democrat Doug Jones touched on the scandals that swirled around his opponent Roy Moore.
This campaign has been about the rule of law. This campaign has been about common courtesy and decency and making sure everyone in this state, regardless of which zip code you live in, is going to get a fair shake in life.
And my guests are Lita Gore in Huntsville, Alabama. She's a reporter for the Birmingham News. And Winston Groom joins us from Point Clear, Alabama. He's a novelist, a historian, and most famously the author of Forrest Gump. I kind of cut you off there just before the break, Winston. You were saying in part that you're not convinced this is a real sort of watershed election in terms of Alabama politics, maybe more of a fluke. Is that right?
That's my guess. I mean, if I just had to shoot from the hip and say so. I mean, it started out when our previous governor, who had his own sexual difficulties and was rejected from office, appointed his attorney general, Luther Strange, to the Senate seat that Jeff Sessions had vacated. And Luther got up there and became a member of the club. And so that was when the primary was held. He was, one of the candidates. But there was a very small turnout in that election, and Roy Moore won it. And the Republicans couldn't seem to get over that. And then, of course, the Washington Post allegations came out against Moore, and that was a sordid enough event to really turn off a lot of Republican voters. I know a number of Republican voters, and most of them are women. You're right. said, I'm going to either not vote, or I just can't vote for him, or I'm going to write somebody in. And the write-ins were, my guess would be the vast majority of write-ins, there were about 20,000 of them or so, were Republican write-ins. It weren't Democrat write-ins.
Well, they obviously knew that writing in another name is probably going to help Doug Moore, although they can, Doug Jones, although they can now say they didn't actually vote for him.
Yeah, well, Dick Shelby, the other senator, he said he was going to write somebody in. So, they probably knew that. I mean, write-in is very rarely does a write-in candidate ever win anything. But I think they felt like they needed to vote, but they weren't going to vote for Roy Moore. And we don't normally produce these kind of candidates down here, yeah. Such as for Roy Moore.
Yeah. So, Lita Gore, have you been out at all today? I'm sure you were up late last night. do you have any sense of sort of how these results are being taken there in Alabama? Is there a sense of shock? Is there a sense of, you know, this is like to be expected?
Well, in some ways, even among Republicans, I judge everything by school car line. To me, that's sort of the bellwether of how life is how the moms are when they drop their kids off. Even among some Republicans, there was a little bit of a sigh of relief, because I think the big fear was, if Roy Moore was elected, what message do we send? What are we going to have to hear for the next 2 years? You know, what are we saying? How do we defend him? Because he's hard to defend. And so I think while there is concern about Jones, and I think that the attention to Jones and his positions on things will grow, there's almost like Jones is a little bit more of a known entity, where with Roy Moore, you never knew what you were going to get.
Mm-hmm. Jones is known entity, you would say.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say he's a known entity in the tradition of a Southern Democrat.
Right.
He's a known entity.
Right.
I heard the best description last night that said more of a Joe Manchin from West Virginia,
mm-hmm.
not a Nancy Pelosi from California. You know, I think that once, but here's the other thing. Known entity is probably not the best word, because a lot of people don't know Jones personally. They sort of can feel a little bit more comfortable. He's certainly more palatable than a Roy Moore. We saw that last night. But I think you will see greater attention on how he does this transition, who he surrounds himself with, and most importantly, who he aligns himself with when he gets to D.C., because in the end of the day, he's still a Democratic senator representing a heavily Republican state, and he's going to have to appeal to those voters if he hopes to have any chance in 2 years.
Right. Let's hear what Carl has to say. He's on the line from Nashville, Tennessee. Carl, welcome to On Point.
Well, thank you very much. And you know, let's not forget when we talk about that Alabama don't produce candidates like this. Let's just not forget why Jefferson Beauregard was a senator and not a Supreme Court justice. They do this, and they will have to pander to their base. To me, yesterday was a victory for decency. But let's not pat ourselves on the back and break our arm. The Republican Party is now filled with evangelical hypocrites that will vote for a sociopath like Donald Trump for president, and will turn around and vote for a guy like Roy Moore, the least of the things he thought that slavery was a good time in our country. So let us not forget that, and the battle will rage on. These people are affront to Jesus Christ, but yet and still they run with Jesus Christ as their standard bearer, but they do nothing Christ-like.
Yeah. Well, Winston Groom, let's put this question to you. I know that you're basically predicting that in 3 years, when this seat comes open again, Alabama might revert to form. But I'm wondering, on the other hand, whether you see, you know, Alabama changing, whether, you know, what implications does this result have for the future of Alabama politics and Alabama voting?
I don't see it change. As I said earlier, I think that this thing was a fluke. I cannot remember any Senate election where such charges were made against a candidate. And if you look at the vote, it was less than 1%. I think that these write-in votes tell you a lot. I think that Moore lost by about 9,000 votes, and there were 20-something thousand write-ins. And so I don't see it. What I saw was that there was a lot of energy in this election, more than I've seen in any other election where I voted. And all I'm going by is just, you know, what happens at the polling place. But there was a lot of people at the polling place where I was. And the reporter from Huntsville said the same thing. And so it was a huge, they were calling for, what, 20%, maybe you turn out, and it looks like it may be more than 50%.
Well, when's
in a by election like this?
When was the last time a national news program called you to discuss Alabama election results?
I don't believe they ever have.
Okay, that's Winston Groom. He's a novelist and a historian. He joined us from Point Clear, Alabama. And Winston, it's great to have you. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
I want to bring in a couple of other voices now. First, Jennifer Rubin joins us from Reston, Virginia. She is an opinion writer for The Washington Post. Jennifer, welcome back to On Point.
Nice to be here, Tom.
So you've made it pretty clear in your own columns that you're not a fan of Roy Moore's. What lessons do you take from this election result?
Well, to begin with, I think we're omitting the people who did turn out. I think what we saw was a landslide turnout by African Americans. And this was the same pattern that we saw in Virginia elections, where Democrats again won big. So you also saw in Alabama a huge vote for Doug Jones among young voters. Under 45, he won by about 60% to 40%. You also saw a huge gender gap. So I don't think you can talk about this race without understanding what's happening among those groups, how energized they are, and how they have the capacity, if they turn out in 2018 and then 2020, to really upset the Republican apple cart. The Republicans have doubled and tripled down on a relatively narrow base. Donald Trump, unlike most presidents, has chosen simply to play to his base. He makes rhetorical remarks. He enacts policies with really solely his own supporters, his core supporters in mind. And what happens is when those people shrink enough or become disengaged or disenchanted, he doesn't have anybody else in the wings that are going to come support him or, frankly, for the Republican Party. So I think what you've seen here is the end result of a party that has gone to one extreme ideologically, but also cast its lot with only a portion of the American electorate. And that's a very dangerous prospect. It works, perhaps, I hate to say this, if Hillary Clinton is the alternative, but she was, and she was a poor candidate, but it doesn't work for long. And I think what we've seen in Virginia and in Alabama should be a big red flashing light for Republicans that they need to reconsider their identification with a certain brand of populism that embraces nativism, xenophobia, nationalism, and that their association with Trump per se may be quite toxic. Remember, he not only did that robocall, he did a rally just across the border in Florida. He tweeted. He was clearly all in. He directed the Republican Party to help finance Roy Moore. So this was a huge rebuke to him. And I think Republicans who were nervous before about their association with Donald Trump should be in high panic right now because they have felt imprisoned, afraid to go out on their own, afraid to break with the president. But I think the reality is if they stick with him, they're in peril too.
Jennifer, one more question for you. So the Republicans will lose a Senate seat as a result of this election, presumably. I'm guessing you would argue that, nevertheless, this is probably in some ways a good result for the Republican Party if it offers them an opportunity to sort of recast their image.
That would be true if they would take these lessons to heart. We haven't seen too much of that. We've seen this sort of group denial, this group delusion. I think, yes, you're right, Tom. Had Roy Moore won, this would have been a colossal disaster. They would have had a fight over whether to remove him. He would have been in the Senate for a prolonged period of time, just as a tidal wave concerning sexual assault, sexual harassment was rising. He would have been the poster boy for 2018, along with Donald Trump. So in some respect, this really was the classic lose-lose, and they lost in a way that was perhaps less damaging. But I've yet to see really any self-realization, self-reckoning, that would suggest that they have the courage or the will to self-correct.
Let's go now back to the phones. Bill is on the line from Alabama, from Auburn, Alabama. Bill, thanks for joining On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I'd just like to say I think it's a victory for Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember what Jesus said to the woman at the well, that the Samaritans worship what they do not know, they rejected the revelations about the character of God as revealed by the prophets. And like if you look at just the book of Ezekiel, the root cause of Sodom and Gomorrah's demise was inequality. And in chapter 18 about the death penalty, it says that God is not pleased with the death of anyone, not even the death of the wicked. And so I think it's a great day for Christianity. If people would read the Bible, including liberals and even atheists, they would have a weapon or a tool to use against the forces of evil.
Let me ask you this, Bill. You say you voted for Doug Jones. Do you consider yourself a liberal or a conservative, a Republican or a Democrat?
I consider myself a conservative, but down here, you know, because of people's lack of knowledge, they don't have the creativity to see that in me, I dare to say.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised by this result?
I really was. You know, kind of lost faith in people. It's a great day. It's a great day. I'm heartened.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, Bill. Thanks for the call. I want to bring in one more voice here before we go to a break. From Washington, John Bresnahan joins us. He's the Capitol Hill Bureau Chief for Politico. John, good to have you on Point.
Hi, Tom.
Your quick reaction to the result in Alabama.
Oh, well, it's a huge blow to Trump. And I also think we are seeing – there's a good chance we're seeing 2010 in reverse. Remember, Republicans wiped out Democrats at the poll that year. That was the first midterm election for President Obama. And they slaughtered the Republican, the Democrats. They picked up 63 seats in the House, picked up 9 seats in the Senate. And they set the tone for the next couple of years of the Obama presidency. And I think it's remarkable how the parallels between now and 2009, 2010, and how Republicans are now looking at what Democrats are looked at that point.
Right. And although we heard earlier from Winston Groom that he thought this is sort of a one-time, one-off sort of result, a result of the Republicans having nominated a flawed candidate.
Well, clearly the same thing happened in the Scott Brown election in 2010. They had the Democrats on Martha Coakley in Massachusetts. This was the seat of had been held by the late Senator Ted Kennedy. And in this case, the Republicans picked it up, and it was a huge win for them.
This is On Point. I'm Tom Gelton. We're sorting out yesterday's Senate election in Alabama and what it means for the country in this time of division. Judge Roy Moore, the maverick conservative, is not going to Washington. You can join our conversation. What do you think it means for the GOP, for President Trump, for the Democrats? Follow us on Twitter, and you can find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guests are Jennifer Rubin. She's an opinion writer for The Washington Post. And John Bresnahan, he's the Capitol Hill Bureau Chief for Politico, and Lita Gore, a reporter for the Birmingham News, who has been this show's eyes and ears throughout this very interesting and important Senate campaign. But first, let's go back to the phones and to James, who's on the line from Alabama, from Auburn, Alabama. James, thanks for calling On Point.
Thank you.
What's your view?
I was a Moore supporter, and I voted for Moore. And many Moore supporters were really frustrated. We did not see any money spent by the Moore campaign, hardly. Very little that I ever saw. I saw no TV commercials, no radio spots. Yet I would see the opposite of Doug Jones. So I think the Democratic Party flushed in so much money, and I think with what really sabotaged his campaign, other than the allegations against him, was Mitch McConnell, who refused to allow money to come in. Now, I continue to hear that, you know, with Trump support, the GOP National Party would be putting support in, but I would see three or four commercials every hour on TV for Doug Jones, and I saw none for Roy Moore. So I don't think he was able to get his message out, whether it was his campaign staff. Now, I believe his campaign director resigned maybe 2 weeks or so before the election. And so it was, I think it was a problem with the campaign, and it was a problem with Mitch McConnell and Richard Shelby, who refused to let Republican money come in for him. He wasn't able to get his message out.
Well, he didn't seem like he made a lot of effort to get his message out. I mean, he didn't, he sort of went into hiding, especially in the last weeks of the campaign, right?
Well, I think he was out at certain places campaigning, at least among friendly people.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing that his campaign manager probably advised him not to get out. They probably assumed that he won the election,
right?
And that probably did not help him at all.
Okay,
I don't think the campaign. I don't think they put good speakers on national media to speak for him. So I think that hurt also. So I think it was a number of things. Whether this is a referendum on Trump, and the Republicans, is there going to be a title shift? I don't see it happening.
Okay.
I just think there were many. Many of these problems is like a perfect storm that happened.
Okay,
and I think that the other caller that was talking about it being a fluke, I agree with that.
Okay, all right, thank you very much, James. Let's go now to Margaret, who is calling. Margaret, you are in Atlanta, Georgia. Is that correct?
Yes.
Now, did you you're a former Alabama resident? Is that right?
Yes, yes. I used to live in South Alabama and live and work there. When I got my first job there, they told me that I was a cut above the rest. I'm black. But I'm so glad that Alabama Values did not make it to Washington. And the evangelicals, I say, bah humbug. Jesus may have forgiven Roy Moore for the 14-year-old. But Alabama didn't. And that Let's Make America Great Again from Trump and Roy Moore, we're laughing at that because you're referring to Jim Crow and slavery. We don't want any more of that.
You saw
your message did not get through.
You saw Roy Moore as sort of representing the past of Alabama, and that was not a great past as far as you're concerned.
Yes, and talking about, God this and God that. Mm-hmm. The evangelicals don't know God, or they wouldn't live like they do and treat people the way they do.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Margaret. Interesting thoughts, and you, I'm sure, followed the results in Alabama pretty closely last night. I'm sure you did. Jennifer Rubin, I'm sure that I assume you still consider yourself a conservative, and yet, in a sense, it seems to me that you are regarding the election results from Alabama as good news.
Absolutely. I consider myself, as I've always been, which is a center-right voter, I am no longer a Republican for reasons that I have expressed. Three quick points on what your two callers expressed. First, Roy Moore was not out. He hid, and he was AWOL this last weekend of the election. I think that did hurt him. Secondly, it is rather comical to blame Mitch McConnell for this debacle. But this is sort of the mentality of the Moore/Trump voter, that whatever the debacle, whatever mistakes they make, it has to be the fault of the establishment and the Republican establishment. The point on evangelicals, I think, is critical. This is also a huge loss for that segment of politicized evangelicals who have become culture warriors, who have stopped any concern or really expression of standards in public life, who backed Donald Trump to the hilt because they thought he could deliver certain things, but really in some sense have sold themselves, made a Faustian bargain. And they come up with a lot of egg on their face here too. By and large, in Alabama, they did strongly support Roy Moore. They've been among Trump's strongest supporters. And so I think in some sense this is a rebuke to them as well, that maybe they need to go back to preaching and give up politics, because their political views are not necessarily being heard in a state that you'd think would be the most amenable to their message. And I think this interplay of the evangelical movement and Trump is one that's fraught with peril, both for religion and for Trump.
Well, John Bresnahan, let's pick up on that conversation of what this election result means for Donald Trump. He tweeted that after he endorsed Luther Strange, his numbers went up mildly, and Trump, in a tweet this morning, said he said then that Roy Moore will not be able to win the general election. I was right. Roy worked hard, but the deck was stacked against him. On the other hand, how much of a defeat is this for Donald Trump?
It's a defeat for Trump. The president, you know, didn't campaign in Alabama, but he went to the Florida-Alabama border region and campaigned and endorsed Moore. He did a robocall for him. The RNC started spending money in Alabama after cutting off Moore. That's at the direction of the White House. I mean, there's no question about this. This is a loss for Trump. And now you've seen a couple in a row now. You saw in Virginia, you saw an establishment figure try to run as a Trump-like populist, and Ed Gillespie for governor, and he lost. And now you saw a true populist figure, a Roy Moore, lose. Now, there were accusations about his behavior that overwhelmed this race. This was the huge issue here. They turned it into an election about Roy Moore and his behavior. So Trump will come away and say, look, this was Roy Moore's failure. This was not my failure. But I do think there's the trends here. I mean, the president's popularity nationally is at a record low for a president in his first term. He's trying to push through a tax bill that they've lost. The Republicans have lost the message war on. It's an unpopular tax bill. He continues to pick fights on any number of issues. He got into exchange with Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand the other day and called her a lightweight. And as the country, you know, discusses sexual harassment and treatment of women, you have the president of the United States publicly calling a female Democratic senator a lightweight. So I think Trump is in danger here. He's in real trouble, as Jennifer's noted. I mean, there is, you know, Republicans are at some point will face a question. Do they stick with Trump or do they try to find their own way forward?
Well, and an immediate question is, what does it mean for Steve Bannon and for Donald Trump's sort of half embrace of Steve Bannon? I mean, I think this morning, Representative Peter King, a Republican, said that he is calling on the president to basically to break with Steve Bannon. He said, Peter King said, this guy does not belong on the national stage. He looks like a drunk that wandered onto the national stage. Can't be good news for Steve Bannon.
No, it's not good news for Bannon. But I do think, listen, Trump is a symbol of the fight within the Republican Party for its soul. Is it a populist, nativist party? Is it an establishment party? Is it the Bush, you know, the Bush family party? I mean, that's still going on and that's still playing out in primaries across the country, and that will continue to play out. And Bush was able Trump was able to, you know, come out of nowhere and defeat 16 other candidates and take over the party. The party is Trump's now, and it's it's a question of where Trump leads the party.
I want to go back to Lita Gore now, who's in Huntsville, Alabama. She's a reporter for the Birmingham News, and she's been with us this whole hour and in previous programs as well and covering this special election. Lita, we heard earlier from Winston Groom that he predicted basically that this will be a three-year term, and that after 3 years, we're going to go revert to sort of Republican control. I'm wondering if that's your sense as well. Is this sort of like a one-off thing, and we're going to go back to Republican dominance in the next Senate election?
Well, I think it depends on what Jones does when he gets in the Senate. But I agree that I would be shocked if we see Alabama is not going to turn into a Democratic state. That is not going to happen anytime soon. I think Jones, his best chance is to take a sharp turn right if he wants to get reelected. We have a gubernatorial race that could lend some insight on this that's coming up. There is a strong Democratic candidate that's the mayor of Tuscaloosa, who is very much a Doug Jones-type Democrat. But one thing I would caution, and I understand from a national perspective it looks like this, but I caution against reading too much into this race in regard to the president, only because Roy Moore vastly underperformed Trump in Alabama. And the other thing to remember is that Roy Moore has been rejected as our governor twice. He barely won a state Supreme Court Chief Justice race against a Democrat a couple of years ago. I think this is much more an indictment on Roy Moore, who, you know, early on distanced himself from Trump, and Trump distanced himself from him. So there was sort of this last-minute push, but even then the president kept hedging his bets, saying, well, let's support the Republican. And, you know, it wasn't until the last final days when Jones was surging in the polls that we saw, no, let's support Roy Moore. So I think Alabamians don't look at this as I'm rejecting Trump as much as they are I'm rejecting Roy Moore. And Doug Jones did a better job of getting his people out. You know, I wonder, even if you take out these allegations that came forward, I'm not sure Roy Moore would have won even if they never came forward, just because of his other issues.
Curious about your view of that, Jennifer Rubin. Do you think that what we're seeing here is kind of maybe a cleansing of the Republican Party, sort of a growing sense that the party needs to sort of marginalize the more extreme figures?
One figure that I looked at was the approval, non-approval for Trump in the exit polling. This was a state that Donald Trump won with over 60% of the vote. The approval, disapproval was almost even in Alabama, 48 approval, 47 disapproval. That is extraordinary. And to a large degree, either his people didn't turn out or his former supporters now have soured on him seriously. And I think, yes, this was clearly a defeat for Roy Moore, who, goodness knows, had a huge number of liabilities. But in some sense, everything from here on out is going to be a referendum on Donald Trump. That's the way midterms work. And it doesn't give much solace to the Republican Party to say, well, Roy Moore was a terrible candidate. They're going to be on a ticket. Donald Trump's name is not going to be on it, but that certainly is going to be a referendum on him. And I think that properly should make them very, very nervous.
John Bresnahan, here's an important question. What is this going to mean for tax reform? I mean, the Republicans can't afford to lose very many votes on this tax reform that they're working on, right?
No, they can't, and they couldn't to begin with. I mean, their margin right now is 52-48, and they're going to, when Jones is sworn in, it'll be 51-49. This puts more pressure on Republicans, Trump and Republicans, to get a deal done now. They hope to have a tax bill, a compromise between the House and Senate tax bills unveiled this week and voted on next week. That has to happen now. So Trump is having some of the Republican tax conferees up to the White House today. He's going to, you know, continue to press them. I think that, you know, it's a question of when Jones will be seated. You've already heard the Republican or Democrats saying, as they did this morning, Chris Van Hollen of Maryland, who's the chairman of the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, say, hey, we should wait on a tax bill until Jones is seated. Republicans aren't going to wait. They're going to push this and do it right now.
And I wonder if that means that there will be sort of less back and forth, less negotiation. Are they more likely to sort of come quickly to an agreement between the House and the Senate?
Well, they were already trying to do that anyway. Yeah. They're up against – they have a number of deadlines to deal with. They have a deadline on government funding, which runs out on December 22nd, and they need to turn to that. And there's an issue on DACA, on immigration. Hundreds of thousands of younger Americans who are brought to this country or younger people who were brought to this country by parents who are undocumented immigrants, and whether how to deal with this issue. So there's a number of issues going on. So they're under tremendous pressure, not only in taxes but on budget and all other legislative agenda for the president.
Exactly. Okay. All right. John Bresnahan is Capitol Hill Bureau Chief for Politico. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Jennifer Rubin, an opinion writer for The Washington Post. Her latest column on Roy Moore is called Be Wary of What You Wish For in Alabama. You can find a link to it on our website, onpointradio.org. Jennifer, thanks to you for joining us.
My pleasure.
And finally, Lita Gore with the Birmingham News, who's been here for our listeners throughout the campaign and election. Lita, it was great to have you again.
Thank you so much.
And you can continue this conversation, and you can get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, betting on Bitcoin, the digital currency's value is soaring. Is it heading for a crash? I'm Tom Jelton. This is On Point.